There was a time when the wine world was ruled by the dark side, under the reign of the unmerciful god of snobbery, known as Pretentious. For centuries, millions of wine lovers who have longed for the freedom to enjoy wine without ridicule have waged an unrelenting war of wine against Pretentious. Today, much of Pretentious's power has been obliterated, and Grape Encounters Radio is the voice of these brave freedom fighters. Even today, the battle continues, but it's just a matter of time before Pretentious is cast into exile by the mighty force of humble wine drinkers armed with the courage to enjoy wine any way they choose. And now, Grape Encounters. Here's David Wilson.
Peel me a grape, crush me some ice, skin me a peach, save the fuzz for my pillow. Talk to me nice.
And it is time for your weekly Grape Encounter, but this is not just any Grape Encounter. It's a very special Grape Encounter that we're going to begin by doing the Grape Encounters news, because the biggest news, I think, in the wine world emanates from this very room. And with me today is our chief wine news correspondent, Larry Gifford. And
this is a surprise to me, David. I don't know what you're talking about.
What do you mean you don't know what I'm talking about? Did you not get the memo?
I didn't get a memo.
What episode are we on, Larry?
Episode 300.
That's a milestone, Larry.
Holy cow.
That is big news.
That snuck up on me.
Yeah, show me one other broadcast wine radio show that reaches as many people as we do that's done 300 episodes.
There is none, David. There is none, bar
none.
Well,
the minute you say that, there might be.
Hey, congratulations.
Isn't that amazing?
I was expecting balloons and confetti, maybe a glass of champagne.
The glass of champagne I can work out. The balloons and confetti, those are – I'm not licensed to pour that.
And frankly, I expected a much high-caliber guest list than me.
Well, we actually do have a very high-caliber guest list, because we will be heading back out to San Antonio, Texas. Not really San Antonio. We're going to go to the Hill Country, because you recall I was out there about a month or so ago, and I wanted to get out and spend a little personal time with Dr. Richard Becker, who is really one of the really big names in the Texas wine business, maybe the big kahuna. So finally got a chance to do that, and I'm going to share that interview with everybody in just a little bit. We actually went to, you know, it's kind of this combination party room, wine cellar, room that honors all kinds of people, both the people who grow the grapes and help in the winemaking process, and even some of the presidents who have poured Dr. Becker's wine.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's a pretty neat place. So we're going to be doing that in just a little bit. And of course, we'll also have Sarah Schneider on talk about a grape that a lot of people are probably not drinking much of, but they should be.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. We're going to take you out of your comfort zone.
Excellent. I love it when you do that. Hey, I've got a question for you.
Yo.
Do you think anybody other than you has listened to all 300 episodes?
I do believe my wife has. Okay, but that opens up the door for a very interesting story, by the way, because there's a guy, and I don't think he'll mind me mentioning his name. His name is Brian Chipman, and he is from San Diego, California. He wrote me a letter back in March, and hang on, I'm tap dancing while I'm looking for it.
You look good tap dancing.
I do. Anyway, oh, here. Okay, all right. So he wrote this letter back in March 21st. It was an email he sent to me, and he said, I found Grape Encounters in December and have since listened to over 125 episodes.
Whoa!
That was almost half of them, and that was in March. He says that he apparently drives a long distance, about 40 minutes or 45 minutes to work, and so he can listen to an episode each direction. Anyway, he's a big fan, and here's the sad part about it. His girlfriend at the time,
okay,
those being the operative words, introduced him to Grape Encounters.
Oh.
And because wine was her big thing, and he didn't know anything about wine. Well, he became a huge wine lover. They split up. But he got me out of the deal.
Oh, that's great.
So get this. He drives up here, and that's like a 500-mile drive. But he drives up here to visit with me, and he stayed – actually, we were in the Grape Encounters wine bar until after midnight.
Oh, that's terrific.
And we got a chance to just share all kinds of wine conversation, and I got to turn him on to all kinds of really cool wines.
Now, how can other people share their stories with you? Do you have an email address they can go to?
Yeah, they can just go to the Grape Encounters website, grapeencounters.com, and click on the area where it says contact.
Cool.
And they can send a message. And we do, as you can see, share stuff with people that you send to me. And I actually have to salute a couple of other listeners. We're going to be doing some stories based on their recommendations.
Excellent.
All right, but now we've got to get into the news.
We have to dive into the news, David. Are you ready?
I am.
World wine consumption has fallen by 13.8% since 1980, according to a new study released by AgriFrance.
Okay, there's the operative word, AgriFrance.
Right.
France is where the wine consumption is falling.
Well, sure.
The young people in France are not digging the wine scene. And they're really about hard liquor. And for whatever reason, the tradition of drinking a lot of wine with your every meal and for every event in France is withering a bit. And we've seen a lot of stories point to the fact that France's wine consumption is going down at the hands of the young people who do not want to follow in the footsteps of their parents. Shame on you.
Shame on you. Now, this report also notes that Europeans still account for over 50% of the world consumption of wine. However, per capita, the United States has now overtaken France as the world's leading wine market, where the average consumption is 12 liters per person per year, or just over 3 gallons.
Per month, you mean?
Per day?
Per day. Hey, I am definitely messing with the curve.
As you always do, David.
3 gallons isn't a lot, but does this include everybody, the entire human population?
Well, I think it includes everybody who is of drinking age. So there's a lot of people who don't drink alcohol at all or don't drink wine
at
all.
That is true.
And beer is really
And then there's guys
now.
Like you and I that are totally
We're making up the
annihilating the curve. But it really is true. We're drinking more and more wine here in the States, which is good because we're probably drinking less and less hard liquor.
And we're producing more and more wine.
And we're producing better and better wine, too.
Yeah. In Indiana, residents have had to conduct face-to-face transactions at a winery to ensure that they're 21 before the wine could be shipped to their house. So they have to have that personal face-to-face contact. That is changing. So this is one of those antiquated laws that's now being disrupted. So the governor is supposed to sign
into – So what, you can go in there with somebody else's face?
No.
Okay.
So the governor is signing into a law that gives everybody in Indiana the right to just prove they have a legal ID. So you could do it over the internet without being face-to-face.
Things are lightening up in Indiana.
Woo, they could use some lightening up right now.
I'll tell you what. All right. What else you got?
Your good, close, personal friends, Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie, are victims of wine fraud.
Are they accusing me?
No.
Okay. All right.
According to The Independent, the Perrin family, which is the Hollywood power couple's wine-producing partners, recently discovered evidence of fake bottles of their limited edition rosé being advertised in China. And the scale of this fraud is yet unknown. But to prevent further wine fraud, new bottles are being engraved with a signature hallmark set into the bottom of the glass bottle to distinguish it from counterfeit editions. And the wine is a light salmon pink color. A black label should read, bottled by Jolie, Pitt, et Perrin.
I think they should just include a little tag that has a signed and numbered imprint of Angelina's lips.
Yes.
They'd need a big piece of paper, though, for that. I wouldn't know if it was counterfeit because I've never tasted the wine.
I've never
And I keep telling Brad, I go, you come over here for dinner, you mooch off of me, and then you don't even bring a bottle of the wine.
Come on, Pitt.
Yeah.
Show up with some wine.
Yeah. You know, I used to get confused as a Brad Pitt relative all the time.
You can't even say it with a straight face.
No. People used to say that there was a strong family resemblance.
Oh, yeah. What was that?
They would say, David, you look like the Pitts.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. What else you got?
Chemical and taste tests are back on 168 bottles of perfectly preserved champagne discovered in 2010 in a nearly 200-year-old shipwreck in the Baltic Sea. Results published this week in the National Academy of Sciences. Now, it turns out this champagne is less alcoholic than modern-day equivalents. And experts believe the cooler climates may be behind the low alcohol because grapes wouldn't have matured as much and the distillers couldn't have gotten as much alcohol from it.
Okay.
Also sweeter than today's champagne. The wine is 14% sugar.
Wow.
Now, brut champagne today has about 10 grams of sugar per bottle. This had 130.
Did they happen to notice if it said Asti Spumante on the bottle or something?
So,
it sounds about right.
So this 130 grams of sugar, that's even higher than most Moscatos these days. And there's a good reason. Winemakers used to add sugar syrup at the end of the bottling process.
Did you get a taste of this?
I did not.
You have got to go to those press conferences
because
they give out little samples, you know.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
Here are the tasting notes. The initial reaction was cheesy with notes of animal and wet hair. But when they let it
open, I have been called that when I was dating. They'd say, "You cheesy animal with wet hair."
Yes. So after the wine got a chance to breathe and get some of that much needed oxygen, they said it was spicy, smoky, grilled and leathery.
And smelled like armpits.
Yeah, one taster said, "It was the most amazing thing. The taste stayed with me for hours and hours." Yeah. I don't know if that's good or bad.
That's what one dog said to the other dog. It was amazing, but the taste stayed with me for hours and hours.
And that's the news as we see it.
No ifs, no ands, no buts. All right. Coming up next, it is Sarah Schneider and then Dr. and Mrs. Becker of Becker Vineyards here on Grape Encounters. Thanks, Larry.
Grape Encounters is 100% estate grown. We have, however, removed the pretentiousness and added a healthy dose of fun.
We're all guilty of sin. We open a costly bottle of wine and recork it with the intent of drinking the rest later. But later comes and goes, and that delicious wine also goes. South, that is. The Coravin is the most reliable way to enjoy your wine without any concern about the unconsumed wine going bad. And while the Coravin wine access system costs a bit more than other preservation systems, it does something they don't. It works. Perfectly. The Coravin is a beautifully engineered handheld device that gives you access to your wine through a small needle that you gently push straight through the cork. Inert argon gas is injected into the bottle, while as little or as much of the wine that you want flows right into your glass. The argon gas keeps your wine so safe, it's as though you never opened the bottle. Want to learn more? Simply click the Coravin link online at grapeencounters.com. Oh, wine is a terrible thing to waste. Get your Coravin at grapeencounters.com.
Grape Encounters Radio is always on the lookout for great story ideas, even if they're completely and totally off the wall. So here's the deal. Share your story ideas with me or send a question you'd like to hear answered on the show. If I use your question or suggestion, I'll send you a special gift from EpicStyle.com. I want to know what you want to know. You can contact me on the Grape Encounters Radio group page on Facebook or email david@grapeencountersradio.com. If you've got something for me, I've got something for you.
If you'd like to hear more no-nonsense talk about wine and all the fun that goes with it, check out WineTalkShow.com. At WineTalkShow.com, you'll find a massive library of content for fun-loving, unpretentious people who aren't afraid to step outside the lines and challenge conventional wisdom. We'll take you places you've never been before. That's a promise. Expand your wine horizons in unimaginable ways at WineTalkShow.com.
Like any good wine, we know Grape Encounters should be balanced and rich with flavor. That's why we're pleased to welcome the esteemed wine editor of Sunset Magazine, Sarah Schneider, to the Grape Encounters studio.
All right, back with Grape Encounters Radio, and it is time for Sipping with Sarah. And you surprised me with a great topic to talk about, and you came equipped with the right stuff. And I'm just going to let you, Sarah, introduce the subject for the day. I guess I should really say the wine for the day.
Exactly. I'm really excited about this. And the topic is Grenache Blanc, and it's a variety that not a lot of people have tasted on its own. They've tasted it in blends. It's a white Rhone grape, and it's been around in the Rhone Valley forever. Generally, it goes right into blends with Viognier and Marsan and Roussan. But I actually think that West Coast winemakers are doing something with it that the French never even thought of.
What is that? Drinking it out of a red Solo cup?
Yeah, okay. That too. And for breakfast. No, they're bottling it on its own because it has such good qualities that it's sort of a star all on its own. And I'm hearing that more and more vineyards are being planted, and I'm seeing more and more bottles. And I thought we should taste it today.
So I have a couple of questions pertaining to this. Well, I should say about wines in general. There are a lot of varietals that used to be blending varietals and have been around since the beginning of time, but are now starting to get their own identity. Do you think that blending originally and up until recently was more about trying to improve a wine rather than something intentional. I'm kind of the impression that blends came out of necessity to try to create a decent wine rather than because we were trying to go someplace even better.
I think mostly you're absolutely right. You hear the terms blending up, which is what you're talking about. You're adding things to create a better whole. You know, you're filling those holes. Well, there's two different kinds of holes there.
Yeah.
But, but then there was the term blending down. And I remember when, 20, 25 years ago, the Bordeaux Blend Society called the Meritage Society came around. They wanted to prove to the world that their kind of blending was blending up for a better wine and not just putting in a cheaper 25%. So you could still call your wine the Napa Valley Cab, but you've thrown some other things into it.
We should probably, on another show, talk about the term meritage. And no, it's not meritage.
Right.
And it's not a French word. And it's not even a real word. Well, it's a real word now, but it was the outgrowth of a competition, actually. And that's a great subject. But for another day, because I've got a glass of Grenache. I've got two glasses. My goodness.
Two is
of
better
Grenache
than one.
Blanc in front of me. So where do we go from here, Sarah?
I think we should drink it.
Well, I can't drink and talk at the same time. All right.
I'll talk while you drink.
This wine here very, very well. Because we actually sell it in the Grape Encounters Emporium, and you brought this in.
I did. I didn't know that
this was a wine that we actually carried. So what are the odds?
Well, there still aren't very many of these wines out there, and they're small productions. But I feel like it has some of the beautiful aromatics and fruit of those white Rhones, that orangey characteristic on top of some apple and pear with a little bit of whatever white blossom is in there, whether it's honeysuckle or jasmine, but not as cloyingly as some of the other white Rhones can carry that profile. And this has a crisp acidity that pushes it all along and just makes it dance. And we actually put this wine to the test in the Sunset Test Kitchens, pairing it with a huge number of foods.
Really?
So fun. We drank it with sushi, with steamed mussels, with fish tacos, with spicy Thai chicken noodles, with banh mi sandwiches, the Vietnamese pork or chicken.
Did you do this all in one day?
One day plus another afternoon.
And I must have been out of town or something. Because I wasn't invited.
You didn't get the message? So sorry. Well, it was truly fun. I mean, this is even a great salad wine. Put a little prosciutto in the salad and grill some peaches and you're good to go.
I think this is a wine that actually is a bridge to a number of other wines. There's been a real huge increase in popularity and production of Pinot Gris and Pinot Grigio.
And this hits it right in the middle.
Exactly.
This is sort of a crisp wine for a Chardonnay lover because it has a creamy, kind of rich mouthfeel while still being really crisp and lively.
So this is perfect. And I don't mind giving a shout out to the winemakers. It's Burbank Ranch, which is in Paso Robles.
It is in Paso Robles.
I don't know if it's available all over the country. I think they're a pretty put together group, but this wine is solid. So you can certainly go to the Burbank Ranch website and see if they can ship it to your locale. But I would give this a 2 thumbs up rating and have no trouble endorsing this product.
I would too. Absolutely.
All right. So that's 4 thumbs up. We have just a little bit of time for the next one, which is from a winemaking group that I think does a fabulous job. Jaffers.
Jaffers, yeah, from out of Santa Barbara County.
Anyway, tell me about it while I sip.
While you sip, I just did. This is a different style.
Hold it. I didn't sip yet. I got my nose into the glass.
And what do you think?
Oh my gosh, if it tastes as good as it smells. And by the way, if you breathe in while you sip, you can probably enhance that experience just a little bit more. I'm diving into this glass.
Okay, while you dive in, the apple quality on this is going to sound bad, but I mean it in a good way. It's more bruised as an apple quality with more florals around the nose, almost heavier jasmine.
I think you want to lose the bruised apple description and go to apple pie instead, where the apple has gotten soft and mushy and delicious.
Oh, you're so much better at this than I am.
No, I'm not. But it tastes like bruised apple.
Doesn't that sound lovely?
Yeah, well, better than a lot of things. Yeah, this is very delicious. It was nice to see your eyes light up like you just met the love of your life. That's good. So the takeaway here is Grenache Blanc, an up-and-coming wine, a lot of it getting planted, more and more people making a straight single varietal Grenache Blanc, and something that you should explore the next time you're in your wine store.
I'm for it.
you're having a grape encounter with David Wilson. What a way to spend the day.
A lot of people ask me why Manzanita Manor's incredible Portuguese dessert wine is called Two Horse. Well, the reason behind the name is as extraordinary as the wine itself. It's because the owner and winemaker at Manzanita Manor Organics actually uses two beautiful horses to pull the plow on her farmland. When you take your very first sip of the Two Horse Vineyard's irresistible dessert wine, you'll immediately experience the winemaker's unparalleled connection to the land. It's what really makes it so good. You can purchase this exceptional wine online, as well as their purely delicious walnut oil, 100% organic heirloom walnuts, and free trade chocolate covered walnuts. To learn more about all the Manzanita Manor Organics products, visit mmorganics.com. You can order all their walnut products there and bottles of Two Horse, of course. Purchase and shipping subject to state and local regulations. Please see mmorganics.com for more information.
We're all guilty of sin. We open a costly bottle of wine and recork it with the intent of drinking the rest later. But later comes and goes, and that delicious wine also goes. South, that is. The Coravin is the most reliable way to enjoy your wine without any concern about the unconsumed wine going bad. And while the Coravin wine access system costs a bit more than other preservation systems, it does something they don't. It works perfectly. The Coravin is a beautifully engineered handheld device that gives you access to your wine through a small needle that you gently push straight through the cork. Inert argon gas is injected into the bottle, while as little or as much of the wine that you want flows right into your glass. The argon gas keeps your wine so safe, it's as though you never opened the bottle. Want to learn more? Simply click the Coravin link online at grapeencounters.com. A wine is a terrible thing to waste. Get your Coravin at grapeencounters.com.
One country cowboy, I watched the seasons change. I worked the vineyards, I walked this range. To grow things right, it takes time. I'm a one country cowboy.
You're listening to Grape Encounters Radio, where we tell you things your parents never taught you about wine. But don't blame them. Grape Encounters wasn't around in those days.
One country cowboy, one country cowboy, one country cowboy till I die.
And we are back with Grape Encounters Radio, and I must tell you, I am in one of the most magical places. And I also will tell you that when I set out this morning heading for the Texas Hill Country to meet up with Dr. and Mrs. Becker and winemaker John Leahy, I had no idea what I was going to find, but now I find myself down. And Doctor, what do you call this room? The barrel room? Is this the cellar?
We call it the library.
The library.
We're aging our wines.
I don't see a single book here.
You have to read these with a cork.
But every bottle tells a story, don't they?
That's right.
You know, I have been talking about Texas wines probably for as long as I've been on the air, which is 6 years, because almost 6 years ago, we did an event with, actually, it was the Landon Winery. You may be familiar with them up in McKinney. And that's when I learned that Texas wines are pretty darn respectable. Although I know they also use little fruit from California. But the wines that I've had the privilege to taste from Texas are amazing, but it saddens me that the Texas wines also don't get out to places like Southern California. I don't know what happens on the East Coast, but it appears to me that the bulk of the consumption of Texas wines is in Texas. And I never figured you all for a greedy bunch.
Texans like things Texan.
They like things Texan.
Yeah, if they're good.
There's plenty of California wines out here, though, right?
There are plenty, yeah. It's a great market for California wine.
You've had some very interesting experiences, however, with some of the California winemakers. Talk to me about your experience at Plump Jack.
Gosh, that story is almost beyond belief, but we found that Mr. Getty was ordering our wine to be shipped to his home in San Francisco. And then when we were there, we called him, and he invited us to have lunch at Plump Jack. And there's a rock mound with a picnic table under eucalyptus trees, and just outside in the center of the vineyard. And he and his winemaker and my wife and I and our son and daughter-in-law had a wonderful 4 or 5 hour California lunch there, where he would send his winemaker down to get subsequent vintages of his Cabernet, and we'd brought some wine.
He was pulling the good stuff?
He certainly was. Oh, he was very generous, very nice to us. But he told me at that time our wine, Becker Vineyard's wine, was his house wine in San Francisco.
You got to be kidding. And how long were you shipping wines to him before you realized who he was?
I think some months. I don't know how
really?
Many. Really? Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, it clicks.
Yes.
What was the incident that made you aware of the fact that he was buying your wines?
I think our tasting room manager came in and said, did you know that Gordon Getty's buying your wine and he ships to San Francisco?
I think that's where the phrase, praise from Caesar is praise indeed.
That's right.
Well, I have to tell you, I have walked around. I have tasted wines from the barrel. I have tasted wines from the library. I have tasted things that are yet to be bottled. And everything that I've tasted here is just amazing. And I feel almost like I have done my listeners a disservice by not pleading a little harder for them to come explore Texas wine country, and especially the Texas Hill Country here. There's so much to see, and there's a lot of wineries here. You could come here, you could spend 2 weeks easily, taste wine, and go see some of the other attractions around here. You'd never be bored. And it really is sort of Norman Rockwell's America here, I think, as well. So, John, you are not from Texas.
No, sir. I'm actually originally from California.
And how long did it take before they accepted you as an honorary Texan?
Well, they stopped me at the New Mexico-Texas border, and I had to take my shots before they let me in the state. But after that, it was all daisies.
Why Texas? I guess that you probably recognized what is really sinking in with me right now, and that is, this is one of the great wine regions that probably is not getting the respect it deserves at this point.
Well, I think,
is that a fair statement?
I think on the national scale, it might be a fair statement, but to understand, we're not distributed nationally either.
Right.
So, Texas is number three in consumption of wine and only number five in production. But the difference from five to four as far as production goes is huge.
The difference between five and one, I think, is 14 to one.
Absolutely, yeah. At least. I mean, the total number of grape acreage for wine grapes in the United States is a little over a million. It's almost 1.2 million acres. And Texas only grows 4,000 acres of wine grapes. Now, in this last year, we saw a 25% increase in plantings, with plans down the road to almost double that in the next couple of years. And yes, it's really kicked off the popularity, not just here in Texas, but then in the border states of Texas. You know, the wine is, pardon the pun, leaking out of Texas. And I think as long as we are number three in consumption, we won't have a problem selling the wine here in Texas.
I had a delicious bottle of wine from New Mexico that really surprised me and shocked me. And they're starting to get their wine program going there. Utah has a great program. Idaho, you know, all of these states are jumping on the bandwagon. But I think it's safe to say that Texas is pretty far ahead of most of the other states when it comes to wine. And it doesn't seem to me like the wine business is going to go anywhere but up, 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 because no matter how much wine we seem to produce, it gets consumed. Nobody's throwing it away.
No, I don't think so, and I at least I hope not.
Dr. Becker, you are very much at the top of the wine hierarchy here in Texas. What kind of support are you feeling on a state level? Is the state encouraging the growth of the wine business here? And how much interaction do you actually have with state officials?
Well, there's been, I think, a lot of support, both from the Department of Agriculture in Texas. The Agriculture Commissioner has always been a supporter. And then both Texas Tech and Texas A&M have viticulture programs with degrees in viticulture from Texas A&M.
And that could be really huge, because if you look at what programs at Davis have done in California, and I'm sure, you know, the lion's share of people who are making wine here at some point or another have been out in California doing some study. Maybe I'm wrong, but that generally has been the case almost everywhere. So you say that the educational programs here in Texas are beginning to grow rather rapidly?
I think they're growing rapidly. There's a new center in Fredericksburg for enology and viticulture that I think is going to only grow. And we do a number of experiments in our vineyards under the direction of people from Texas Tech and Texas A&M. So studying grape diseases and different rootstock and trying to find the best match for our part of the world.
A lot of people don't realize that Texas was the salvation of Europe when they were hit with phylloxera so many years ago. And that's sort of a little known fact, but Texas did come to the rescue.
Well, a buddy likes to tell us, sir, but I was asked to discuss the Burgundies at a test event dinner one night, and when I stood up, I said, I want to congratulate this group for drinking Texas wine. Because all of Burgundy is replanted on rootstock from Salado, Texas.
What percentage of rootstock from Texas is being used in other parts of the country and the world? I know a lot of it goes to California.
Yeah, I think the original selection was made by the French at the end of the 19th century, and they crossed the wild grape from Texas with a wild grape from Bordeaux. And that became the base of the rootstock. And then there's been a tremendous science of that ever after.
So in terms of the overall business, and I'm going to turn the mic over now to Mrs. Becker, because you may very well be the queen bee. She shakes her head no, but I think it may be true. One of the most elegant people you will ever meet, but you've been in this since day one. You were not a wine drinker when you started out in this business. But what have you seen change since the time that you and your husband got involved?
Well, we both grew up where our parents drank mixed drinks and not wine. But then 20 years later when we started the winery, we were just wine had just sort of hit the Texas scene. And I think the whole United States was more interested in wine in those days. So we just rode a nice wave. People were interested in drinking wine. We do make a rosé, and people would come in, I want that pink one, thinking it was going to be Zinfandel. But they soon, you know, became educated.
That's the same problem all over the country. Is the rosé is very hot right now, but there are two different rosé drinkers, the ones that think all rosés need to be white Zinfandel, and the ones who have discovered that there's this entirely new world of rosé. Actually, it's not a new world, but it's making a huge comeback of wonderful wines that if you were blindfolded, you might not know if they were red or white.
Well, we're very proud of our rosé. Let's see, we won a double gold medal in San Francisco. We were just absolutely delighted, and that's a wine that Richard always pours when he's asked to pour wine. He's so proud of it. John Leahy, our winemaker, made it. When we first started, we had Sauvignon Blanc and Viognier, and we were the first in Texas to plant Viognier, and our consultant came and walked the fields with us, and Richard said, I want to plant Viognier. And he said, oh, don't do that. This is Texas. They'll never be able to, they won't know what it is. They won't be able to say it. So we planted Viognier. It was very popular, but we had to do an educational theme. And when we first placed it in restaurants, we had to have the staff out and educate them about Viognier. So, gosh, I think Viognier was one of the first things that we introduced and people liked, as well as a rosé.
Let me go back to Dr. Becker for a second and the idea of educating your public, because I had a long conversation, actually two conversations, with the folks that founded the Barefoot Wine Company. And one of the things that they talked about as being the success of Barefoot and making it the biggest wine company in the country now was the fact that they got out and they educated people about those wines and got them to taste them. What kind of challenges have you faced when it comes to getting people to drink Texas wines and understand that they're as good as anything that you're going to find anywhere else?
Well, the challenge is getting it in a glass in front of them. That's
yeah.
That's the trick. And the nice thing is that our winery, which is a few miles out of Fredericksburg, which has about 2.5 million visitors from all over Texas and many other places in the United States, is an opportunity for people to turn in and taste our wine. And the more they hear about our wine, the more they come down the road, and then they taste our Viognier and our Rossan and our Cabernet Franc and our rosés. And then that's how it works. But we'll have between 80 and 100,000 people visit our winery this year.
No kidding.
And if we could get that many people to taste our wine, then they'll like it. They'll tell their friends. But I don't think any other marketing works as well as having it in the glass and in someone's hand.
All right. I want to talk to you just a little bit more, just a couple more minutes. I'm going to take a quick breather. We're sitting in the library. It's a tasting room. It's an event room. It's a barrel room. It's an amazing library of wines produced by the Becker Vineyards here. And I'm with Dr. and Mrs. Becker, as well as winemaker John Leahy, who comes to us from California and is really doing an amazing job here. We'll be back with more Grape Encounters from the Becker basement. I don't know what this is, in just a moment.
Your Grape Encounter will continue momentarily. So while you're listening to these important messages, do a little multi-processing and join the Grape Encounters Radio Facebook group page. That way we can share things with you that we might not be able to tell you on the radio.
I'm a wine country cowboy. Got dusty boots, red on my mind. My soul.
We're all guilty of sin. We open a costly bottle of wine and recork it with the intent of drinking the rest later. But later comes and goes, and that delicious wine also goes. South, that is. The Coravin is the most reliable way to enjoy your wine without any concern about the unconsumed wine going bad. And while the Coravin wine access system costs a bit more than other preservation systems, it does something they don't. It works. Perfectly. The Coravin is a beautifully engineered handheld device that gives you access to your wine through a small needle that you gently push straight through the cork. Inert argon gas is injected into the bottle, while as little or as much of the wine that you want flows right into your glass. The argon gas keeps your wine so safe, it's as though you never opened the bottle. Want to learn more? Simply click the Coravin link online at grapeencounters.com. Oh, wine is a terrible thing to waste. Get your Coravin at grapeencounters.com.
If you make April your month to do some California wine tasting, your friends will surely be green with envy. That's because throughout the month of April, California wines aren't just red, white, and rosé. In April, you'll discover just how green California wines are, too. April is California Wine's down-to-earth month, and wineries all over the state are celebrating the state's leadership in sustainable wine growing with fun and educational events everywhere you turn. California has one of the most widely adopted sustainable wine growing programs in the world, with more than 70% of California's wine growers and winemakers committed to practices that benefit the environment, employees, and neighbors. And best of all, the quality of the wine is simply superb. From Earth Day wine and food festivals and green wine trails to vineyard hikes and horseback rides and special tastings, find out more at discovercaliforniawines.com. Just click on the tab that says April is Earth Month at discovercaliforniawines.com.
I'll be somewhere down in Texas if you're looking for me. Drinking in that great wide open, soaking up the summer breeze, kicking back and settle.
And now, Grape Encounters with David Wilson continues.
I'll be somewhere down in Texas if you're looking for me.
All right, we're back with Grape Encounters Radio, coming to you today from the Becker Vineyards Library Room. And as I said when we came out of the last segment, it's a barrel room. It's a wonderful party room. The walls are lined with library wines and photographs that commemorate the people who grow the grapes here. And as I told you, we're also sitting with John Leahy, and he is the chief winemaker here and probably does a lot more than that. Varietals, John, how many are we talking here?
We do about 15 varietals.
That's a bunch. Overall.
It can be. Last harvest, we had 85 individual fermenting lots.
Oh, my gosh.
Of wine.
And you keep them all separate, each and every one.
We do. Nobody liked my idea of a giant million-gallon tank and just relabeling.
That was not your idea.
Yeah.
So. Although that is a bit of California thinking
well,
there. Yeah.
Well, you know, like we're doing now with all these tastings and stuff, I feel like we're doing a version of My Drunk Kitchen, but in the winery. The varietal that we just tasted, that Cabernet Franc, was the one that really was my biggest surprise coming to Texas. And
yeah.
How beautiful, aromatic, and just gorgeous this wine is. And I was joking earlier when I said I just want to kind of take the bottle, go to the other end of the table, and let you guys talk. But I'm really seriously considering doing that.
That bottle's already in my bag.
So,
you know, honestly, and I'm not being paid to say this. I'm not doing this for any other reason except for the fact that I like to report the truth. Every single wine, red, pink, white, that I have tasted here has really been an outstanding expression of those grapes, but definitely some of them do have characteristics that I would say I've not tasted other places. I mean, it probably as close as it gets is the Sauvignon Blanc that to me has a certain New Zealand quality with the tropical fruits and all of that, though it lacks the grassiness, which I don't like in the New Zealand fruit.
I agree with you. I feel like the overt grassiness is actually more of a fault than a characteristic.
I also think they roll those wines out a little too quick. They pick them too soon, and they're a little bit green to me, and you get that greenness in those wines. And were it not for that, I'd only drink New Zealand Sauvignon Blancs. I do like California Sauvignon Blancs, but I must say that I love this particular wine a lot. This would be a great go-to Sauvignon Blanc for me, no matter where it's from. I just think it's going to be a case of having to educate people and give them the opportunities to try these wines, because right now, if you don't come to Texas, you're probably not going to find them.
Very true. We do not distribute currently, unless you're in our wine club, we do not distribute outside of the state of Texas. As far as coming to Texas, it's a great excuse to come to the Hill Country. And what really did it for me was when Doc and Bunny and I were talking when I still lived in St. Helena, and they sent me a sample of their wines to try, and I was really very pleasantly surprised at the amount of fruit, the varietal correctness. It just was an eye-opener for me.
What did they need you for?
That's what I asked. Exactly. So our previous winemaker here had run away to Spain and is living his dream with his own little vineyard there. So I thank him for that.
There are two happy stories there.
Absolutely,
anyway.
Absolutely.
What were you shocked about when you tasted the wines from the Becker Vineyards, when you contrasted those wines to what you're used to from Napa, Sonoma, Mendocino, the places that you had worked?
I don't know. I don't really think I was shocked so much as I was not aware of how many different varietals were grown in Texas. I was aware of Texas wine. And unfortunately, I'm rather embarrassed to admit this, you know, my memory of Texas wine is some of the sweeter wines. Not bad. They were just sweeter. And I don't think I was mentally prepared for the outstanding Bordeaux varietals.
Those were made from elderberries.
Yeah.
Yeah, things like that.
The idea here, what I tasted, I thought it was a perfect opportunity to come out here and grow my own knowledge. I love the idea of being an American winemaker. And I had a lot of really wonderful mentors in Northern California, a lot of great winemakers that had opportunity to work with and work beside. And all the way through that experience, all of these folks, the common thread was, you know, just take the fruit, let it make the wine, try the wine, and then go out to dinner and enjoy the fruits of your labor.
But so you are from that culture that believes that we should let the fruit speak.
Absolutely.
Speak.
Absolutely.
We got to wrap it up, but I want to go back to Dr. Becker for a second. There's a wall in your tasting room that should be behind glass and very well protected, and it's letters and menus from the heads of states, et cetera, who have served your wine. I have seen these kinds of walls in a number of tasting rooms. I have to be honest with you, I've not seen as many as I've seen in the Becker tasting room. How does that happen, first of all, and how does that feel?
Well, it feels wonderful, but I think Bunny's a better expression of how that happened.
Well, it helps to have a Texas president.
We've had, what, three of those so far?
we were just delighted.
You just gave away your secret. You realize that?
I know. Well, maybe Rick Perry will make a run for it.
Well, Rick Perry's on the wall. Yeah.
Yeah, he was. When he's governor, he's been out and been very kind to serve our wine.
What a wonderful property this is. If you are used to going to places like California for wine tasting, do not overlook the wine tasting opportunities in Texas, because you're going to find that the wineries are every bit as exciting, but with a Texas flair that you will not find anywhere but Texas. The hospitality and all of the other accoutrements and amenities that come with the Texas wineries are not to be missed. And yes, you can spend 2 weeks tasting wine here. I'm in the hill country of Texas. You can fly into San Antonio. I think you can fly into Fredericksburg too, can't you, as well? No?
With a small plane, private
plane,
you can.
You got a little itty-bitty plane, you can come here too, but it's just an hour and a half drive out of San Antonio. And San Antonio is a great place to use as a launching pad to come out here. So come check it out. But I'm afraid that's all the time we have today. My heartfelt thanks to Dr. and Mrs. Becker of the extraordinary Becker Vineyards in the Texas Hill Country, Stonewall, Texas, to be exact. Also, many thanks to winemaker John Leahy, Sarah Schneider of Sunset Magazine, Larry Gifford in the Grape Encounters newsroom, and the rest of the Grape Encounters cast and crew. Well, it's time to uncork a new bottle, and you have my word, if you were here, we'd certainly share it with you. Well, maybe next time.
Kicking back and settled in with my family. I'll be somewhere down in Texas. If you're looking for me.
Today's edition of Grape Encounters is over, but we're always as close as the World Wide Web. So enjoy your favorite wine while exploring the day-to-day world of Grape Encounters. Then we'll meet you back here next week, same time, and the next delicious wine.